My name is Bob, and I am an addict. I don't know where I'm going with this. My head's been playing crazy shit over there, and sitting down. I don't know where it says to get raunchy, or get bizarre, get historical, or just get hysterical. Because I played all those things through my head while I was sitting over there, you know, in terms of the things that were going on here. I was trying to think back when we used to be some hard-nosed addicts around. You know, if you came in here soft-soaping or bullshitting, we'd tell them to light them up and get them out and get them, hook them up. You know, and be willing to go outside and fight about it. Huh? You know, I heard the glasses, the people that do that rim on the glass, thing on the glass. I had those people be looking for those jokers. Come on outside, sucker, you know, just get out, you know. You're messing with my head. Yeah. Another thing is, I was like, everybody want to have a spiritual experience. Somebody tell me, let's all get undressed. We can have a hell of a spiritual experience. Yeah. Many of you have already had one. For many of us, we stayed out there a long time with that experience, you know, because we couldn't be who we were. You wanted to be somebody else. Joe next door, Joe down the block, somebody up the street. It took us a long time to get to Narcotics Anonymous where we could find out who we were and try to be who we are. And it took a lot of processing along with that. And I don't know if there's anything new that I can really tell you, because much of the stuff that I've heard over the weekend so far was my story. And that was from the little girl she's only 21 or 2 or 3 or something now, that had 5 or 6 years out there in the madness. She talked about my experience from where I came. And then somebody else came right along and told about running the streets and being locked up. Then Vetro come and tell about this here thing about our ego. You know, like, that's my story. It's not different in that respect. Fact is, the similarities is what got us here. And sometimes we have to recognize that similarity from a different perspective as to what, you know, our growing and staying around here, maturing. And it's a long process that goes with that. And sometimes we have to be tolerant of those that are coming along that don't know or have not learned or they are where they are. Have no great expectation of anyone in this particular room at any given time. Have nothing to do about time. It has something to do about how fast you mature and what you have learned since you've been here. And sometimes we fall short. I know I do. Of my own expectation of me, I fall short. And then when I have expectations of you, I'm sure very often, more chances than not, that I come up short. So I have to be involved with my program and my growth. As I said, the young girl talked about where I came from. I came from this family long time ago. I grew up before the Depression. Not this one. That other one. I grew up during Prohibition. Now that's going to date me real good. But it was during hard times and there was a lot of broken up families, there was a lot of people separating and leaving children and people going off into the wild blue yonder. I guess that's where they were going. Because I don't know where the old man went. I know he left. And he left mom to take care of whatever she had to take care of. And my mother was one of these people that she had no guides in terms of what a parent was about. And I see that many young people grew up today don't know what parenting is about because they had no examples as to role models as to what a parent's supposed to be about. And perhaps they didn't have a role model, and their mothers didn't have a role model, and their mothers didn't have a role model. So the chain or that same thing that goes on and on and on and on until the chain is broken. Love was not spoken in my house. I don't even remember hearing the word in my household. Long as I was in my household, I can't remember hearing the word, I love you. Very strange. Now, Mom did not demonstrate love. You know, she didn't touch us very much. Only when she's whipping ass. Eh? Then she would touch everything. But that was a control factor. That's how she dealt with things. She whipped everything into shape. Yeah? She got her licks in early, so she knows what that control thing was. That's all she had to know. Raise her voice and go into that act. Huh? And she had control. She got fear down. Say, she's getting hers over before you get yours going. Okay? She's only about 5'5", but she'd get bent out of shape. Yeah? And she'd get wild. You know that? Madness start coming on, you know, and she whip everything, you know. But I was a kid that I wanted some attention. I was a very needy kid. It's called, Mom, I'm over here, you know. And I didn't care about getting the ass whipping. I wanted some attention. You know? Didn't make any difference how I got it. If that didn't work, you know, I'd bleed on something or break something or throw a rock. Didn't make any difference how I got attention. And it worked quite effectively for a long time. I never could understand why I used to seem to be, you know, kids that break out with everything, you know, things that they don't even know what, they don't have no name for them. You know, you break out, you have bumps all over you and scars all over, and they don't know where it come from. They give it all kind of names, you know, technical or medical names that when they call, I don't know what it is. But I used to break out in everything. So I was always getting salved over or sewed up or stitched or something all the time. You know, got a lot of scars. Okay? Last count on just the head alone was 16 scars. Okay? I don't have them stitched up, sewed up, patched up or something, you know. And it was one of these here, I didn't want to be a bad kid. I don't think I ever set out to be a bad kid. In some ways, I wanted to please others to make me, you know, it seemed that you get some plaudits, you know, some pats on the back or rubs on the head, just nice kid, good job done, all this stuff. I wanted that. But I had nobody to give it up. But I would learn a lot of games that people play. You're talking about the character that becomes the addict. And I developed a character of fear, wanting to be loved, feeling that I did not have enough of anything. It seemed to be you were having more fun, you had more things, I did not have it, and I always wanted it. And I so desperately wanted that attention. Desperately wanted that attention. So I learned how to play the games of getting attention. It's called put on a good front. And I learned how to put on good fronts. Learn how to play the game of being the good kid to get the good front going. Knowing how to put the right fronts on in order to get attention. Even in school, learn what game to play in school. How much the teacher wants? How do you get the teacher's attention? Play the game. That's how I got through school. Playing that game of polishing the apple. Huh? Clean the blackboard, you know. Stay after her to do this little chore. Yes, ma'am, no, ma'am, you know. Be real attentive. Draw a beautiful picture and put a lot of effort into it. Put a lot of front on it. Nothing behind, but learn how to put the front on. And I learned that was one part of the games you play. You put a good front on. I could make beautiful reports on the front cover. It just was nothing inside of it. Open the pages and say, I'm always talking about this potential. I know it got that potential. See, I give him a great dash, you know, like, well, I was going to get it. Huh? And I was always living off of that dash. Never on what came after that. There was no substance after it. Early, somebody was talking about, since I've been here, reading. My great escape was reading. I don't care what it was. I could be the hero of the day, the villain the next day. Whoever's having fun, Bobby Kane. I used to live in the book, inside of these covers. Inside these book covers, I could disappear. I could just go on great adventures and travel great distances and live another life, because I was never satisfied with the life I had. I had no satisfaction in terms of where I was at any given time. My head was always out to lunch, wanting to be over there, doing something else, doing something different with somebody else. It was never satisfied where I was. It always seemed to be better over there, wherever that was. And I was born in the Midwest, born in Cleveland, Ohio, where it snows, gets cold, gets snowed in for days. So reading was just kind of an exercise. Anyhow, you had to do something. There was no TV, so we used to watch the radio. Huh? For those of you old enough to know about watching the radio. And we used to travel, have great adventures on the radio. Wanted to be there, wanted to get into the box, and hey, Hi-Ho Silver, whoever, Jack Armstrong, All-American Boy, wanted to be somewhere doing something else, and it seemed like everybody was doing that, but not in my neighborhood. It seemed to be on the next block somewhere. Now, even growing up, I had a dual personality. And I'm talking about this dual personality. I told you Mom didn't want to upset Mom. Now, we had extended families, the neighborhood I grew up. The woman next door might whip your ass and send you home. Or the one up the street might, they call her mothers, extended mothers. Huh? You do anything in the block, baby, you're going to get it, it's going to get home. And we didn't have no telephone. Huh? It'll beat you home. That clothesline and back fence. Oh, man, they pass on. Did you see Bobby down the corner? He went around and he done it. And when I get home, my mom be up there. What was you doing out of it? How she know about that so? Huh? Now, I run all the way home, but she got the message already, So I got an ass whipping coming, So I had to kind of cool it in the neighborhood. And I had this here kind of walk that tightrope in the neighborhood. But when I got out of the neighborhood, I seemed to self-destruct. I wanted to get into things. Or I had this peer group, or my partners, we wanted to get into things. And I learned how to steal early. My first habit was stealing. I used to love to steal people's shit. Made me feel real good when I had your thing. And when I could divide them up and share them with my partners, it made me feel better. So I was on a mission most of the time. Sometimes just stealing garbage. Not really stealing nothing expensive. You go into stores and just pocket full of junk. But it was stealing no less, and the things I could share with other people, because I couldn't buy these things. And the way that I acquired them is to steal them. And you ask Mom, ask me a question, where you get that? And I had a lie. I learned how to lie early. Yeah, I'd rather tell the lie than tell the truth. Even when the truth would have been sufficient, I would tell a lie. Or I'd be telling the truth and I would stretch it to such a proportion that it would be a lie. I think you had to embellish, the lie you wanted to build on. You know how the lie that you want to build on, how great you are or how big your thing is or whatever the case is, and you build on it. The same game. It's the same game, We build on it, and you're saying you would have told the truth, you would have, it's been sufficient. But we'd have to build on it, decorate it, put flowers on it, until it became a lie. Now, this is building character. Not knowing where it's going to take you, but still the character that you're going to become. We didn't talk about our feelings. Nobody in my household talked about feelings. I could not share how I felt with Mom because Mom wasn't listening. It's
called shut, sit down, shut up, don't want to hear. Do what I say do, period. I couldn't talk with my brothers and sisters because they didn't understand either. Because they didn't talk about what they felt, so I didn't talk about what I felt. My biggest feeling was to say, don't get your cold feet off me in the bed. That's about it, you know. Don't do that. It was always a case of fighting for some territory or something, or fighting for some foolishness. And that was right internally. We just fought amongst ourselves. Then after we fought, we still got ass with it, see? Because you couldn't know it was a call of a no-win situation, as far as that was concerned. So I'm growing up, you know, in this kind of household of turmoil. And the turmoil, most of it being within, internalizing this turmoil. I couldn't talk about how I felt. I couldn't talk about what was going on. There was nobody to listen to, no confidant that I could go say, this is how I feel, or I feel bad, or I feel good, or I'm happy, or what do you think about this? Nobody to exercise this need for people to express themselves. It just wasn't there. Now about this time, you know, I'm getting older, I'm growing up, and we have this kind of position when we think that we have arrived at manhood. Now, I had no role models. My role models were the joker standing on the corner under the bright light, driving a long car with two or three old ladies in the car and talking long shit. My role models. Huh? Those were my role models. Only ones I had. Only ones I know that look good in my neighborhood. They stood out on that light and they laugh loud and talk long shit, punch a sucker in the mouth and shit. They had it gone. And I stored it away in the back of my head. I want some of that. Sounds good to me. It looks good to me. I want to do that. So those became some of my role models, you know. About this time, it said, right in that age, it say, when you think you done reached manhood, World War II started. Remember, they had another one before the Korean War and Vietnam. That one. And the joke that I ran around with was 2 or 3 years older, my brother's crowd, and they started drafting to get jokers off the block. Now, I got to take a position of man now. So I'm moving up. They're moving him out, and I'm moving up. So I become man of the neighborhood. Huh? And I experience the kind of the sexual experiences that you have, that most of the older dudes was going being drafted and so forth, and they leave them the young bucks to take over. Huh? And the girls on the street didn't care. You say, you old enough? Hey, you 15? Hey, you old enough? Come on home with me and let me teach you something. And I would have learned another thing, putting notches in your belt, you know, and all this other crazy shit that we go through when you reach that period of puberty where that's all there is. I mean, that's all there is. You know, your focus, you talk about your focus, you get focused. Huh? Okay? And so your destination is to see how many of what you can do in the capture department, you know, in your conquest. And you start walking different, you start talking different, and you start acting different, you know. You have arrived, you think you may. At least I did. I was doing those manly things, you know. And Mom didn't know. She couldn't squawk about what she didn't know about. I learned how to keep things out of the neighborhood, off the back fence, and around the corner. See? And keep it out of her eyesight. Even when the ladies come by and say, well, is he home? I want him to do some errands for me, you know. She used to ask me about them folks, you know. What's that woman coming around here asking about you? Oh, she just want me to do some errands. And she didn't pay it, no, she didn't question. And I'd run off and do errands, you know. It was fun to me. And about this time, you know, I'm getting close to this here draft age, and what happened was my partners I was going to school with, we were about to graduate, and he was about to get drafted, and so I was about coming up for draft age, and I say, Well, they heard somewhere where if you go volunteer, you could go where you want to go. So me and my partner went down and signed up. And we wanted to go out there and have adventure. They said they wanted some good men. And I thought I had a ride. So we went to the war camp. Now, I hadn't started using drugs yet. I'm just developing character. See? Developing character. And I thought I was a pretty good character, a pretty good guy, you know. I wasn't a bad guy, as I told you. I didn't get into a whole lot of things with the law. A lot of it has to do with that fear, because I didn't want to see Mom self-destruct. See, Mom didn't care how big you got. Okay? She'd go off on a suck in a minute. Okay? And I didn't want to upset Mom. Okay? So if I could do it way across town, out of her eyesight, out of her reach, I could be a pretty good guy most of the time. My neighborhood image was, Bob, hey, the kid to be like. A lot of the neighbors around in my neighborhood wanted that kid to be like Bob. Because Bob, you know, be a pretty good stand-up guy in the neighborhood. And I wasn't bringing no police home. You know, they came and checked me out a couple of times, you know, because they heard something happen, you know, but I didn't go to jail or nothing. And I'm not using anything. Yet. So when I get to the war camp, it seemed the order of the day was, at the end of the day, everybody talked about, let's go out and have a good time. And they start anteing up the money. I wonder what this anteing up this money for, you know. We're going out and have a good time, baby. Shit. And what's the money for? Hey, we got to get a little taste of something. So they go out and get a jug, and we start out having a good time. And most of my experiences, first experiences, were bad experiences. Because I didn't know nothing about drinking, but you passed me the jug, and then I seen everybody else chug a lug, you know. Huh? Well, that's how you do it. But after getting a little bit of the hanging down there, and it's in your head, get to be, hey, shit, that's all right. Huh? Something disappeared. One of them was fear. That overwhelming fear I seemed to have, or that kind of whole backness I seemed to have, was disappeared. A kind of a magic took place, you know? A kind of a magic to transformation that takes place, that you're out of character. And things kind of like just mellowed out. Huh? I wasn't afraid of anything. Bob would do that shit. Hey, huh? Dare Bob to do something. Oh, Bob would do it. Shit. Huh? Bob started waking up, you know, a day later, coming out of one of these things, talking about what happened. What did we do last night, Ben? Oh, we went out and had a good time. I said, what happened? We went out and had a good time. Because we always started out to have a good time, and very often Bob never remembering the good time that we had. Because I'd wake up in funny places, you know, where I wasn't supposed to be, with somebody I wasn't supposed to be with. And I was having this good time. My first toke on the joint was the same way. I was going out to have a good time. And the joker would come on the scene, one of them hipsters out of New York, say, maybe have you tried any of this yet? I just watched him a couple of times. He just, you know. And all the kick of his teeth is there. Oh, shit. Well, I can do that. Had a bad experience there, too. Choked to death, you know. Puked on everything. Things got weird. I didn't like the feeling. I swore off of that one. Check that one out. I ain't gonna want none of that no more, you know. But I was always seeking something to get out of self to make me feel different. Because usually I didn't like the way that I felt. I rather feel like you. You're what you seem to feel like. You seem to be happy-go-lucky, finger-popping, everything's okay, and I wanted some of that. And I was always trying to obtain that. About this time, the war ended, and it was a case of where you want to go, whether they're going to send you somewhere, where you want to go to Europe or the Far East. And I had read about the Far East. Well, it was very intriguing. Things of the Orient seemed to be very intriguing. Huh? Very inviting. It's great adventure. Huh? And I had, the first time I had heard about any drugs was reading about drugs. You have to realize, I started using in 1945. That's a long time ago. They didn't talk about drugs. In fact, this was a non-subject. It was almost as bad as sex. They didn't talk about sex then either. It didn't exist. As far as the nation was concerned, they didn't talk about those things. They seemed to be living in some kind of a world of, if you don't know about it, you ain't got to worry about it. Huh? Because I knew nothing about drugs, no more than what I'd read about. And I had read about opium dens in the Far East. And my first thing in my head said, Bob, you want to go to the Far East. You want to go check it out. Huh? They're not fighting over there no more. You don't have to dig no foxholes. You go just check out what's going on over there. Huh? And lo and behold, I sent me to Japan and said the first thing I do, I went out hunting. Because the crowd I ran with, we looked for adventure. And any place they say you don't supposed to go, that's where I went. They had a lot of places, red lights and off limit. They had put signs up and say, stay out of here. That's where we went. Man. Because we went hunting for things. The first time being hooked, I knew nothing about being hooked. I used heroin for a whole year and didn't know what a hook was. Nobody told me what you get hooked if you use. As I said, they didn't talk about drugs. Nobody knew nothing about addiction. They didn't talk about it. It was not discussed. And I used opium. I used heroin for a whole year and didn't know what hooked was. I found out what sick was. I was to learn some valuable lessons in the process. One of them was don't get too far from the connection. Huh? And if you was in the military, they would ship you and don't take the connection with it. And so you learn all the substitutions and goes along with it. You learn all the things that will work until. They had a lot of morphine. Military had a lot of morphine. And being a thief, I had a lot of things to sell. Government got a lot of shit to sell. And I was always in a position most of the time that I could transport it. Because I had been a mechanic before I went to service, and so I was still a mechanic, so I was always had a truck or a car or something to drive somewhere with some of their stuff. So I was in business. Huh? And I used over there, as I say, for a whole year or so and didn't know what hooked was. And I learned about getting shipped and not finding out what substitution you can use. If one thing's not available, you use something else. And I was to do this for quite a few years. But as I say, you learn all the lessons as you go. Because there's no teachers of how to be an addict as such. And I thought I was just a user. I thought I was just a party timer. But every time you start getting sick and you say, well, I better have a little more, I can kick this thing anytime I get ready. I ain't got no problem. And it just gets worse. Because there's nobody to tell you these things. They didn't talk about, addiction. They didn't talk about using drugs. They told you, don't mess with none of that shit. Period. Not why. But they just tell you, don't mess with that shit, and that's it. And a lot of us got strung out. And I never could understand the difference between a user and an addict. I understand it today, but I couldn't understand it. Because a lot of people that were with me partying, they got to a certain place when the stuff come on the scene. They say, no. I had enough of that yesterday. I never refused. they could refuse because they had wives to go through. They had to go home. They had to do all this stuff. And I say, man, how about a little, just another little taste? No, nah. They would go ahead and take care of business. And I couldn't give it up. And I was to bounce around the world for the next 10 years in the military, covering it up. I learned how to manipulate and play the game of cover-up. I learned how to recognize addiction because I would come to find out addicts all over the world do the same shit. They talk the same language. They have no problem with language. I stayed out of the country 9 years, and the reason I stayed out of the country because it seemed to be easier to do those types of things not here, to do it over there, out of the reach of the law, so to speak. Knew nothing about the progression of disease, this disease called addiction. It always gets worse and never better. Even when we're covering it up real fast, it's still getting worse. My demands for drugs were becoming increasingly worse at all times. I couldn't fake it. It gets to the place where you can't fake it. People know that you got a problem. I'm the only one that didn't know I had a problem. I would just say, you leave me alone, I'll be okay. And you fake it off that everything's okay. And if you're taking care of a little bit of business, you think everything's okay. If you're covering up fast enough, you haven't got a problem. But this here thing called addiction is always progressing. And it always gets worse and never better. Always gets worse. But I couldn't tell myself that it was getting worse. But it was getting worse. It got to the place where I was being watched. You know, you become suspect when you're doing weird things. Huh? When you're not supposed to be doing those weird things. And that's what it became. It became a thing that I became suspect. And I got watched, started watching. I got snitched off over in the Far East, transporting and bringing drugs on a military installation. That's simple, you know. And what brought to snitch me off? I would have gave her something anyhow. She didn't have to snitch me off. They was giving bounties, you know, turn a sucker in and make $25. I would have given her $25, you know. But she turned me in, and I got caught up into this here thing called a disciplinary. Get caught up in the thing called going to jail. It reached a proportion where, you know, you can't fake it anymore. And you got to do something. And I told them I didn't have a problem then. They got me dirty, and I didn't have a problem. So what they did was give me one of them good discharges and ship me back to the States and gave me some time. Then they go to crueler thing they did. They put me out on the street and told me to make it. And I told psychiatrists and psychologists and things how well I had the game down. And they said, you got it. You know how we can lay out a plan of action for somebody that don't know what addiction is about? We can lay out a great plan of how we're going to make it or how we're going to live and what life's about. And we sat in great sessions and talked about these great things of how I'm going to straighten my life out and how I'm going to do this and how I'm going to do that. And I had not a clue about none of that. Because you have to remember, I left right from mama, I went to the military mama, and I went to penitentiary mama, and now I ain't got no mama. Now I'm in trouble. I'm not in trouble. But you had asked me, I would have told you I had the game down. Intellectually, I could have told you each step from growing up from a little kid to adulthood to dying as to what you had to do. And didn't have a clue. Didn't have a clue. I had never been responsible for me in life. I was always following a set of instructions of how to. Time I left home, mom was telling me, this is what you do and how you do it. And I want you to do it this way. Went right to the military. This is how you do it. I could follow those kind of instructions. But instructions to living, I knew nothing about. I had no clue about what you had to deal with living. And one of the things I thought was going to be the great fix-all was to come to California because I don't know nothing about no California and I don't know nobody in California and I'm going to start me a new life. I don't know why I thought that great geographical change was going to make it, you know. Because it hadn't helped me in all the places I had been. I got drugs anywhere I had been before. And I don't know why I thought California was going to be different. And time I got to California, first thing I do was run into an old shooting partner that I left in Korea. That didn't even live here. And the first thing when old dope fiends meet, the first thing they holler and say, "What's happening, baby? You got any money?" I know where they got it good. And if you were a person like me, you were susceptible and had not made no commitments about quitting anything, let's go have a little taste for old time's sake. And I would do that many times because you start going to jail, you start getting locked up, and every time I would have to make the great promise that it's going to be different this time. Every time I got out left one of them places, I had swear it off, I had the master plan, I knew what I was going to do and how much I was going to do it and who I was going to do it with. Didn't have a clue. But I did have a clue about I needed to be taken care of. And I went and found me a succession of mothers to take care of me. I don't care what mother it is. Any mother will do. And there's a lot of mothers out there looking for some kid to take care of. And we play the game of mother and child, mother and husband, mother and lover, mother whatever. Whatever your needs is, I could become. As long as you took care of business. And somebody was talking about having somebody to run for you when you get locked up. Very important that if you're going to do a lot of time, you got to have somebody to run them. They're going to put money on the books, they'll write you a letter so you can get a letter occasionally. Then you got to choose very judiciously in terms of who you get. Because if you get a shooter or somebody using, they don't have time to be putting no money on the books, come visiting you or write no letter. And probably won't be there when you get out. So you'll learn that process. Many of us go back to our maternal mother because they seem to be the one that'll tolerate a lot of our bullshit. But since I was so far away, I just needed another mother. And so we started picking and choosing very well in terms of, has she got a job? Is she going to school? Is she got a house? Do she have some money? Is she going to run for you and go for your bullshit? And we should learn how to pick them. We choose them real good. Because I went through a succession of those ones that didn't measure up. And I found me one good lady that said, "Let me help you get your shit together." And I said, "Why not?" And as she proposed in the county jail, her proposition was that for me to stay in your corner and to help you, we got to get married. Now, I don't know what she thought marriage was going to do. But that's all I did to say, I do. Go pay the bail, baby. Get the lawyer. I do. And for the next 2 years, I liked to not run the lady crazy. She liked to went insane. And people that don't have our problem, they deal with these problems differently. They get tired of something, they go get some help. See, they know when they need help. We don't. But she was going to help me. So in the process, after getting married, you know, I leave to go get a loaf of bread and be gone 6 months, you know. Or I'd call her from one of them funny style places, you know, called jail, and tell them they're messing with me again. And police used to run down the street and say, "Get in the car, Bob." And they usually caught me dirty. So it was just a succession. There was her running to jail, trying to run out in the street. "And have you seen him?" She got to know all them people that, you know, because she'd go to work in the morning and I'd make the house a shooting gallery. She used to come home and check her silverware. And the only thing I didn't sell out the house was the silverware. She had something about that silverware. I don't know what it was, you know. That was called her treasure. Huh? But the thing about it, you invite people in your house, they won't use stainless steel spoons. They like silver. I don't know what's the difference than silver if you're just going to put dope in it. They would like them silver spoons, baby. Shit. And then they wouldn't clean them good. And she was talking about, why is my silver spoon lacking on the back? Huh? And of course I told her I didn't know. Can't have a clue how that happened. Yeah. And dope fiends have a tendency to bend shit. They put that crook in it. So it'll sit right, you know. And she's got to the habit where she used to come home and just take the spoons and put them all together. You know, you put them all together. If it don't fit, somebody be messing with them. So she used to get bent out of shape a lot, you know, because she was working and I wasn't. Huh? I couldn't work. I had all these X's against me, you know. I'm an ex-con, I'm an ex-this, and I'm an ex-that, and nobody's going to hire me. I wasn't looking anyhow. As long as she was taking care of the bills, I didn't look, have to look. And she stopped giving me the money to go pay any bills because I swear I paid that light bill. I don't know why they want to turn off them lights. What you cutting the telephone off for? I don't know. Didn't you pay the bill? I gave you the money yesterday. Of course I didn't. I had to use that money to keep from being sick so I could go out and get something. So that was automatically front money, right? And then we run for days trying to catch up the front money so we can pay the bill so she won't know. Never works out. How I got to Narcotics Anonymous was the process of this here happening over and over again to the extent where she's going to get some help, give for her help for herself, and she found a thing called Al-Anon. That was before Na-Na. Huh? And they told her the first thing, they told her, they said, put him out. Huh? Now, you know we played that game before. You got to go. Huh? That guy, you got to go to the game. Huh? Don't think you can beg good. Huh? Get on and do some benders, baby, and beg, baby. You know, I'm going to get me a job tomorrow. I'm going to get some help tomorrow. Just tomorrow. Just, baby, you know, yeah, you know. We butt her up and just swing around that, hey, yeah, you know I'm going to do all right. Yeah. And we put her through that same shit day in and day out. She'd go off to go to work, and, you know, and I'd be off into my madness, you know, and come on down, you know. Come on down. You got the bag, come on down. Yeah. Always had a connection. Okay? As long as you got a place and have a telephone, you know, you're hooked up, right? So what happened at this time, they told her to put me out, and we played that game of you got to go, you know. But at the same time, she ran into this one lady. They told her, said, they got a thing they're starting out there in the valley. Now, I don't know nothing about no valley. I don't know if you know about anything about, I told you I didn't get too far from the connection. South Central is where I moved. South Central is where I stayed. What was around it didn't bother me a bit. I didn't bother even to learn what was around it. And they're talking about, they got a meeting over there in the valley. What valley? No, no valley. I'm not getting out of South Central. Ain't got no car anyhow. Because you know we drove in $50 cars, you know. The cars that you could put nickels worth of gas in them, huh? And until it runs out, you know, you then get somebody to put another nickel's worth of gas in it. Huh? Those cars, and it was usually your car that I was driving. Because I didn't own a car. I drove your car when you got locked up. I would take over and drive until they'd snatch me out of it and send me to jail again, you know. But they told her about this meeting over in the valley. Now, one Narcotics Anonymous meeting in the world. Mind you, one meeting in the world,
she go find it. Huh? Slick dope fiend like I am, I sent her to the meeting. Told her to go. I told her to go check it out. You have to remember, you know, as I told you, I didn't get that too far out of the neighborhood, you know, and they're talking about over in that other foreign land over there, over in the valley somewhere. I told her, go check it out, baby. Yeah. And you have to realize, 1959, addicts were persona non grata. Anywhere. I mean, you talking about not being wanted, didn't be cared about it, none of that shit. Joe Fiend had a hard time congregating anywhere but in jail. And then they segregated you in jail. They kept you away from the rest of the population. They put a big N on your car, on your booking slip, and isolate you by yourself with a bunch of more dope fiends. That's it. So 1959, we were people that were not wanted, and they were trying to find out what they could do with us. One of the things is they were trying to, maybe they had a vacant island over here off of California somewhere that they were talking about sending dope fiends to. Send them out here on that island over there. Shit, they with the goats or something, you know. But they didn't know what to do with addicts, that's for sure. So she went out to this meeting, come back and told me about this thing called Narcotics Anonymous. Said this little old man sitting around the table reading us out of this book to these here four or five other addicts, and they helping each other how to stay clean. Sounded okay to me. And since I had been worldly traveled and used drugs all over the world, I thought I'd go out there and show them what the game was all about. Before I go out to this meeting, though, in order that I can go, I didn't have a problem with any alcohol, you see. So I'd get me a short dog. Somebody was talking about get a half a pint of gin. I used to get me some whatever a dollar would buy. And I mean whatever it would buy, you know, to get me cranked up and get me started for the day. Yeah? And that's the way I went to the meeting. I'd get me enough juice in me so I could get loose. I'd get to the meetings and they couldn't read, most of them. And I could read. I might not know what I was reading, but I could read. Okay? I knew the words. I knew where the periods and the commas were. And I could say, you know, read with a little class even, you know, with a little finesse. They were stumbling over words and couldn't tell what periods and things were, and I thought they had evolved in bad shape. But I'd be loaded. And who got a problem? The problem solved. Bob always had a problem. I had no license. I had no job. I had no money. I needed a new old lady. I needed a car. Gimme, gimme, gimme. Great. Hey, I need help. That's all they tell me. Keep coming back, Bob. And then when they would write me when I was locked up, they'd ask me the old question, you want us to pick you up when you get out? No, I got some business to take care of. Addie's got more business to take care of. Going in and coming out of one of those lockups, always got business to take care of. I don't know what business, but do you know what business it usually is? It's called getting loaded. Eh? Just before you go to lock up, the first thing you know, I got some business to take care of. Just call, I'm going to get loaded or get me a keister so I can carry some in. And when I get out, the first thing I want to do is go to old time to see who's still there and get a little taste for old time sake. Every time I took that one for old time, for old time sake, I got hooked. And I was going back to jail. There were no detoxes. There was no place to go. Detox was county jail on a cement floor. Detox was maybe some aspirin and some Pepto-Bismol. That was your kicking device. Huh? Rest of it, you had to kick it the best way you could. And you get out and do it over and over again. The same shit. But one of the things that happened in rooms like this here, that's very profound. They read the steps. They said, how it works. And if you allow yourself, you hear somebody's experience that parallels yours, that say, maybe they're dopey. Maybe I'll listen to them. Now, what I did when I went to my first meeting, I got that little book. It used to be a little yellow book. It had 8 pages in it. And all it had in it was 20 questions, the steps, traditions, and the serenity prayer. Huh? That was it. Yeah. But it had how it works in it. And I used to carry that book in my back pocket. Even when I went to jail, I used to carry it in my back pocket. Because you know what the judge said? I went, Rabbi, what are you doing about your problem? You got a drug addiction problem. I'd pull out that book and tell him, I'm going to Narcotics Anonymous. On a couple occasions, I got a break. Then it got to be old hat. They didn't want to hear that shit, you know. Lock him up, you know, as the law prescribed, whatever the case is. But I keep that book, and I had doodles all over it, you know, and had my last rites and everything in it. You know how you put all, you know how we do. You know, we put little scribbles down, things that are important, huh? But I wasn't ready to clean up just yet. This disease of ours becomes terminal. You either do one or two things. You either clean up or die. You heard what I said, didn't you? Huh? Clean up or die. Because the progression of the disease is death. And the crisis will occur where, hey, the only thing you can do is die. Or do something about this here problem, and it's not nobody else's problem, it's yours. And if you've been to Narcotics Anonymous, you have the formula. The formula is the 12 steps. And if you've heard the 12 steps over a number of times of being in meetings like this here, you can't dismiss it and say, it's your problem. No, it is your problem. And you have to take possession of it, and you have to be responsible for it, because it is your problem. And your problem becomes, you want to live or die. You have to make the decision. You have no excuses anymore. You can't blame mama, sister, brother, and nobody else. You have been to Narcotics Anonymous. They have told you how, give you the formula. Now you must do it. What an order. What a concept. You mean I got to be responsible for my own behavior? Boy, I ain't never been there before. But what happens is, somebody's willing to walk hand in hand along this journey of recovery. That's the key. I thought I had to do it alone because you didn't understand my plight. You didn't understand. I had contempt for the steps called Narcotics Anonymous, hard work. I had total contempt for it. And didn't understand the first step. I already got contempt and don't even understand the first step. But I came to believe that something I had to do differently. Somebody told me the steps will work whether I believe they work anyhow. They told me the steps work like cast oil. You ain't got to believe in them. Take them, find out what happens. So my starting on this journey, because if you get to the place where you become willing to do just about anything other than what you're doing, because drug addiction will kick ass, literally. Because I said it always gets worse and never better. So you have to measure as to what your worst is. Because we look at another person and say, boy, he sure need to clean up, you know. I ain't as bad as they are, you know. You get as bad as you can get, and then you want to give up, and maybe you become willing to do something. I became willing to do something because I was coming closer and closer to that thing of at the other end of a gun, and I didn't like that position I've constantly found myself in. People wanting to kill you. They used to shoot dope fiends. They didn't give a shit about dope fiends. They shoot them just for the hell of it. I think they put notches on their guns because I got one in the head myself. Yeah. And you wouldn't even make the newspaper. If you did, you wouldn't have but two lines on the back page. That's how they used to shoot dope fiends. And nobody questioned it. We were public nuisance. They used to do it just like roaches, you know, stomping on them. Yeah. But I came here and I started, you know, something started to gel in the process. I became willing to try these steps the best I could understand them. And as I said, my understanding was not too good. I had difficulty with addiction. Because I used to come to meetings and say, I'm a dope fiend. I'm a hope to die. And they just said, okay, Bob. They didn't try to correct me. They said, accept it the best way you can. Understand it the best way you can. I didn't understand what addiction was about. I could tell, I had the word, and I read it many times. I thought it meant something else. I didn't know the totality of addiction, the total of my whole being, what I had arrived at and where I came from, my total action, my feelings, my everything was what they were talking about, what addiction's about. It wasn't the drugs that I used and the way that I used them. It was what got me there. Drugs may have saved my life on many occasions, because I don't know what I may have done if I didn't have something to soften the way or to respond to whatever was happening. And I had to take me a long time to understand what addiction was about. It took me 4 or 5 years to come up and have any God consciousness, because I counseled that one a long time ago. That was church. Had nothing to do with church and me. No, no, no. Bunch of hypocrites and lames over there anyhow. Spirituality, hooked it right up with that God thing. Wasn't none of that either. That step don't apply to me. My case is different. But I had some kind of your consciousness. Okay, it's God. Okay. I can accept your prayers because I think my results of my being here is results of somebody else's prayers being answered, not mine, because I wasn't praying too well. Somebody told me the only time I prayed was at the solid, in that holding pen when you're going out there to see the judge. It's, well, damn, baby. Hey, man, give me a break. Yeah. And when you left, you didn't say thanks if you got a break. Or if you didn't get a break, you say, I know it didn't work anyhow. Didn't know it was a break by getting locked up sometime. Because very often I was being saved from me. Because usually when I got locked up, I was in such a bad condition, I've been rescued. And part of the rescue was, they said they'd take me in and fatten me up and, you know, make me look good and put on that good front again. They go out there and do it all over again. And the thing that happened here, I became willing to do these things that were suggested to the best of my ability. And something happens when you apply this formula to self. Something happens that you're starting to like you a lot better. You start feeling better about you. And when you start feeling better about you, you start doing better about you. What a concept, huh? Just the idea, I started feeling better about me, I started doing better about me. I started looking better to me even. I became worthwhile. Hey, damn, that's all right, shit. Pep in your step, you know, shit. Man, baby, shit. Huh? I'm fronting up pretty good, huh? Hey, doing all right. Want some more, huh? Found out I was employable. When I went to look for work, I could get work. I had no problem about getting work when I looked for work. I started becoming productive. I started paying bills. I started doing these things that people do. I started living as others do. I started having what I thought were successes. At first, my successes were the things that I had. I thought it was very important that I had things. So I started buying things. I thought that was a means of success. What kind of front, you know, what you got? What kind of car you driving? What kind of suit you're wearing? You know, what kind of hat you got? That was what Narcotics Anonymous, we used to go home out of the pits and dress up to go to meeting, baby. Huh? That mean that we were successful. Talk about the last, you know, my new pair of Stacy Adams, shit. My Dobbs I just bought, shit. My Hickey Freeman, hey. We used to go compare clothes. The clothes, you know. Filled, man, I just bought me one of those, man. Yeah, shit. Say, life's looking up, huh? Yeah, you know. That was our measure of success. We had a job. We find these steps that we're working in all areas of our lives. We learn how to deal with relationships that we knew nothing about. We learn how to talk about our feelings. Because we started sharing our feelings, what we were feeling. We started feeling, period. We weren't cutting ourselves off from the experience of the feelings. We learned how to experience things by being clean. Things that I did not experience while I was using. We need the experience of knowing that we can feel, we can be a person, we can be human. Those are all new things. They weren't all new things. I didn't allow me to feel for a lot of years. I cut my feelings off because I didn't want to feel the feelings that I feel things very intensely. I'm a very sensitive person. You can hurt my feelings like that. And if you used to hurt my feelings, I used to fix them. I used to fix for everything. Have too much fun, I'd fix that. Get mad, fix that. Anybody piss me off, fix it. I know how to get to take care of it. I used to fix everything. And then I don't have that, I call it luxury of fixing things, and I have to deal with things. I have to live life on life's terms. There are many areas I think that we come to experience here. You know, I've been to a lot of places. I say I went around the world a couple of times, and I did not experience those things that where I went. I've been back to a lot of those places, and I've become able to experience those places. It has been a living experience today. It's different. We learn how to experience life. We become sensitive to life. The human experience is that we feel those to feel things. I used to think that you're not supposed to feel nothing. You're just supposed to walk through life like a robot. Don't feel nothing. You're a man. Bullshit. I learned how to feel things. I'm not afraid of my feelings today. Fact is, it becomes an experience as to what life is going to issue tomorrow. I'm not afraid of those tomorrows because I've been able to experience what life is about. Living in Narcotics Anonymous becomes an experience. It's a journey. It is a journey. You don't have to go anywhere to get any recovery. Recovery is right here. We have the tools of recovery. The tools of recovery is the 12 steps. If I could suggest to anyone here to do anything, I would ask them to do the steps in its entirety, in its continuity, at least one time. If it don't work, you can go out there and do what you were doing. But most of the people that I know that have experienced the steps working in their life are still here. And it's not that bad because I can share those feelings with another human being. I don't have to lock them down. I don't have to be macho man. I don't have to be any of those things. I just have to be human. I must learn how to be human. Human is sharing experiences with one another. Finding a power that runs everything. See, that's the experience. Now, that's the ultimate experience. The ultimate experience is to find out that I don't run nothing. If I don't run nothing, I've been trying to turn it over to you all the time. I was just turning it over to the wrong person or the wrong thing. I need to turn it over to God. I used to turn it over to man. Fix me, baby. You know, shit. Rub me right there. I feel good, you know. The experience, ultimate experience it is to have God work in your life and to have the experience that God works real good in your life. Okay? It took a long time for me to understand that experience. Till I come to understand that God had worked in my life when I didn't even recognize that God was working in my life. My very survival was at the hand of God. Because I could not have accomplished or done or got out of the things that I've gotten out of by your power or my power. It was impossible. I had to have some God experience. I can recognize it as God experience because it was man could not have put the details together, could not have collected you together in order in my behalf. Only God could do that. And I had to have some God experience in order for that to come about. Fact is, I was on parole and fighting with parole officers and playing them games. And I had to go back to jail, what it amounted to, in order to discover what God was about. A hell of an experience. But it was necessary for me. Because ego had taken over. And Bob was running his life. Shit, Bob was doing all right. Bob had a new car parked at the curb. Had $200 or $300 suits on. Huh? Had a new pair of shoes. Job, paid all my bills. And going to meetings. Don't mess with me, sucker. You know. Parole officer wanted me to do something else. I told him a few things I told him. He put me in cuffs and locked me up. See, I show you what kind of high power I got. I tell him what power I got. Put them cuffs on you. They go downtown. Yeah. He came to me. He used to come to meetings and check on me. Well, they didn't like me going to meetings anyhow. Because he was in control of my life. He thought he was God. Huh? I'm your parole officer. You are doing what I say to. Hey, you do what you do, and I do what I do. But I experienced some things that came together as a result of that experience to show you that God is manifested in many ways. He presents himself in many ways. The circumstances that were put together, I could not have dreamed of them. I could not have wrote the script for. The people that came into my life at that particular instant, I did not know. Had never met them. And I don't know, I couldn't put it together. And then I understood that he didn't run nothing, you don't run nothing, and I don't run nothing. So if that's the case, I better give it to who that runs it. Huh? So every morning, my prayer is, okay, baby, you know, here we go. What you got planned for today? Huh? What you got planned for today? With you, all things are possible. And that's true. I see God working in many people's lives at any given time, at all times. And we must have that experience of God working in your life to understand what I'm talking about. I can sit here and talk to you about some spiritual experiences that I've had since I've been clean. At once, I used to call them coincidence because I had no God consciousness. Now I understand what God consciousness is. We got the best coming, folks. Don't sell yourself short. The very best you have coming. God wants the very best for you. I don't know about your God. My God can't fit in no particular room, no particular edifice, no particular name, but God. The ultimate good. And you got that coming. Because God wants you to have that good. I used to think God being shitty, baby, God, shitty, baby. He didn't give me what I wanted. No, he gave you what you needed. And that's what I've had plenty of since I've been clean. I've had plenty of what I needed. Not what I wanted. The power of prayer. I can't leave that one out. I found out about the power of prayer before I even acknowledged that there was a consciousness of God. They told me about prayer. I said, if you really believe in it, pray for it. But watch what you pray for. Because you'll get it. Huh? Then after you get it, you might have to have another prayer saying, take it away. Huh? And I used to pray for some bizarre, some very bizarre shit. Huh? Because a weird dude like me, see, we got some weird consciousness as to what we think we need or want. Huh? We got a bag full of want bag. Huh? Got to have one of those. You can have three of them if you want to. You better be able to take care of it. You can have two cars. Five old ladies. Huh? Old dog and a picket fence if you want to. You better be able to pay for it. Better be responsible for it. If not, you're going to lose it. Then you want to blame God for taking it away, huh? No, no, no. You don't want to put that mess. You begged for it. But you weren't ready for it. And very often you find out that the prayer works. So if my prayer for you would be that everyone in this room on this journey of recovery don't have to go any further than where you are. The tools are the 12 steps of recovery, and they work real good. Get a God working in your life. Get some understanding as that of God working in your life. And experience that God working in your life so you won't have to go out there and try to experience not feeling and running away from this thing called living. It is my firm wish that everyone here next year and the year following that I meet you on this journey. We have lost many people in the last couple of years that were on the journey of recovery. Fact is, I just done a memorial on my last sponsor. I buried three sponsors already. They were all clean when they died. But nonetheless, all types of illnesses is taking its toll. We must be vigilant about our health, too. We must go do the things that are necessary. And we must pray for that, which is called our health. And pray for others in this here thing, too. I started to get up here and say I was looking for me a new sponsor, which I am. And I was up there telling him, I'm not sure what I want for a new sponsor this time. I need about three young girls to be my sponsor. So to make me have to work the steps. You might pray up on things that make you work the steps. They would have my attention for sure. But they make me have to work the steps. Because that's usually what relationships do, you know. We want to work their steps and not our own steps. But I don't know what God has in store for me. But I know whatever it is good. I know it's good. And long as I don't pray for something that's out of left field, I need to know that it says God's will for me and not my will for me. And with your help that I'll get what I need on this journey of recovery. Because it's here in this room. We have the opportunity in this room here to have experienced many things. So stay around and let us experience it together. And I want to thank you. All right.